Hello, and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that the hottest chili in the world was made by accident. A British farmer was trying to come up with a novel entry for the Chelsea Flower Show. He wanted a good-looking chili plant, not a hot one. But the peppers his plant sprouted, which he has called dragon's breath, are hotter than anything else in the world. So hot, in fact, that eating it could kill you. The pungency of a chili pepper is measured on something called the Scoville scale, named after its inventor, an American pharmacist called Wilbur Scoville. So for the Scoville scale, the dried version of the pepper is dissolved in alcohol until a pure oil of its heat components, called capsaicinoids, can be extracted. This pure, hot oil is put into glasses and set in front of 5 trained tasters. Then the oil is continually diluted with sugar water until 3 out of the 5 tasters can no longer perceive any heat at all. Then the quantity of dilution is used as the base of the Scoville heat unit. So if a habanero pepper is 300,000 on the Scoville scale, that means that one drop of its essential oil can be detected in 300,000 drops of water. It's also a linear scale, so a 300,000 habanero is 100 times hotter than a 3,000 jalapeno. So the dragon's breath pepper measures 2.48 million on the Scoville scale. That measurement easily eclipsed the previous record holder, an American chili called the Carolina Reaper, which measured anywhere between an average of 1.6 million and a high of 2.2 million on the Scoville scale. The dragon's breath pepper is not for consumption, or at least the full thing isn't. In fact, eating it could cause you bodily harm or even kill you, and it's a death that would be excruciating. You see, usually when you eat something really spicy, receptors in your mouth send signals to your brain that there is pain there. The brain produces endorphins to block that pain, basically numbing the area. But a really spicy pepper goes beyond numbness. For something really painfully spicy, your body will basically sacrifice the top layer of its skin by creating blisters in the mouth or throat, wherever the spice is strongest. And the blisters can help absorb the concentrated heat. But blisters don't stand a chance against the dragon's breath. What happens instead is that the capsaicin, that active chemical compound of the pepper's heat, well, it would just plow right through all the layers of your skin and nerves in your mouth and throat, quite literally burning your airways until you vomited, which would be the best case scenario, or you go into anaphylactic shock and your airways close. So don't eat a dragon's breath pepper. In fact, when the plant goes on display at the Chelsea Flower Show this year, it will be sealed in a container just to be safe. This week I learned that your brain starts to eat itself after chronic sleep deprivation. Researchers out of Italy came to this conclusion after studying the effects of sleep deprivation on mice. One group of mice were either allowed to sleep as long as they wanted or had been kept awake 8 hours past their sort of usual bedtime. But another group of mice were kept awake for 5 days straight, which was meant to mimic the effects of chronic sleep loss. Then researchers studied and compared the brains of these mice. They were looking specifically at the brain's housekeeping system. These are called the glial cells, and they're in charge of clearing the brain out of the worn out or unnecessary parts. Previous research had found that the glial cells become more active after a period of sleep deprivation. And that's pretty much what the researchers found. Both the chronically sleepless mice and the ones that had less sleep had heightened activity in the glial cells. But the type of glial cells that were thrown into hyperdrive are really telling. There's one glial cell called the astrocyte. What the astrocyte does is it prunes the useless joints between nerve cells. They're called the synapses, and it rewires the nerves. An increase in activity with the astrocyte could actually be beneficial in the short term because rebuilding the worn circuitry could protect healthy brain connection, so that's an okay thing. But the heightened activity in another kind of glial cell called the microglial, well, that was more alarming. The microglial prowls the brain for damaged cells and debris. And some regular upkeep and cleaning is good, of course, but too much and your brain could be ridding itself of perfectly good brain work. But if the microglial goes into overdrive, which the study suggests in extreme cases of sleep deprivation, it could lead to a range of brain disorders. And actually, previous studies have found that this kind of excessive microglial activity has been observed in Alzheimer's and other forms of neurodegeneration. This week, I finally learned why some raw fruits and vegetables make my throat itch. Do you guys get that too? When I eat the occasional apple or like a raw green bean, I weirdly immediately feel like I have like an itchy throat and I need to do that pig noise. But it's not all the time, and also really an allergy to some apples that seems completely beyond abnormal. But luckily, thanks to the good people at NPR, I know I'm not alone and it's not in my head. I can blame this weird occasional food itchiness on my horrible springtime allergies. Yay! It's a condition called oral allergy syndrome, and it's fairly mild, an itchy throat like I have, or a redness or swelling around your mouth as well. And it affects people who are also allergic to plant pollens. So if you haven't been able to breathe through your nose in a month and can scare a young child with your puffy dragon eyes, well, you might know what I'm talking about. Basically, what's happening is that your immune system is getting confused. Many fruits and vegetables have proteins that are similar to the proteins in pollens, the same ones that make your body revolt. So when you eat an apple, for example, your immune system mistakes the fruit's proteins for the plant's proteins and reacts to it. It's called cross-reactivity. Oral allergy syndrome is harder to track and diagnose on its own. Like if you wanted to go to a doctor for an allergy test, they wouldn't find you allergic to apples, for example. But if your allergies flare up in the spring or fall, you may also have an increase in this so-called pollen-related food allergy. And the solution, basically, it's not all that helpful. It's basically avoid those foods, or don't eat them raw, or at least peel the skin, where the protein is often concentrated. NPR actually has a helpful guide to the specific fruits and veggies allergy sufferers might have as triggers. Like springtime folks sensitive to tree pollens should steer clear of apples, pears, plums, kiwis, some nuts, and even celery and carrots. I'm sure there are more because we, the allergic, can't have anything nice, but at least you can take some comfort that you're not alone. This week I learned how flamingos can balance so expertly on one leg. It seems an enormous feat of strength and balance that those beautiful pink birds can stand so elegantly on those spindly legs, but it turns out flamingos are expending no effort at all. A team of researchers from Georgia conducted several experiments on both live and dead birds. What they found was that flamingos have an underlying anatomical mechanism that basically locks the leg in place. They call the phenomenon a passive gravitational stay mechanism, and the bird's skeleton is key. They have two main joints. The little knob in the center of the leg that we can see is actually their ankle joint, not the knee. The knee is farther up the leg, hidden under the feathery body. When the flamingo lifts a leg, it actually angles the standing leg inward so the foot stands centered below the body, and this angle engages the stay mechanism, locking that ankle joint and the leg in place, requiring no further muscle work to keep it there. Now, technically the leg does not lock, which is why they use the word stay. A lock would imply that the joints are fixed, but the flamingo's leg is actually fixed in only one direction and flexible in the other direction. So instead of a lock, the leg is more like a doorstop. But once in the standing stay position, the flamingo actually expends less energy. The birds may sway a bit if they're standing on one leg and doing something else like eating or cleaning, but researchers observed that as the birds fell asleep, they became more stable. Researchers actually tested this on the flamingo cadavers. Standing the dead birds on two legs failed, but standing the bird on its one leg still worked. Two legs, of course, require muscles that the cadavers would no longer have, but the one-legged pose just required that skeletal mechanism, which was still in place long after they died. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned, you can go to theweek.com/podcast, where you'll also find our 7-Minute Opinions podcast and our 7-Minute Explainers podcast. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, we'd love to offer you 4 totally free non-commitment issues of The Week magazine. To get those, visit theweek.com/4free. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.